Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge. With Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the 1987 Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, the first podcast ever because it is coming to you directly from 1987. The year is 1987, my name is Robbie or Squidge or Summit, and I am joined right now, live, by
Will Owen again. And I've hyphenated my name so it's got again in it. In my 1987 form, you're legally now called Robbie or Squidge or whatever you want to call me, aren't you?
Yeah. That is going to be on my birth certificate when I'm born in 8 years' time.
Yeah. And I'm born in 10 years' time, under, given this World Cup's in, May? So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I've got a month or so to go beyond this. I want to apologise firstly, I'm in quite an echoey room if that does come across. Hopefully I've done everything I can to try and cancel that out, but that may be the case.
Do you know what you should do? You should become a duck, because ducks' quacks don't echo.
I've really tried that.
Right, okay.
I worked really, really hard on that, yeah. I lived in Derby and Nottinghamshire for most of my life.
That's quite
in
good.
In order to buy into the fact that everyone calls you duck.
Yeah, that's quite good.
And yeah, it hasn't really worked.
No.
I've considered joining the hockey team from the film The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not good enough at hockey to be on a hockey team. Yeah.
If only it was lacrosse.
I know. Have I told my lacrosse story?
Yeah, you have, before?
Yeah, I have. I'm inexplicably excellent at lacrosse, but I've only ever played it once, for anyone that is wondering.
Yeah. So, sadly, we're not doing a lacrosse podcast, nor playing lacrosse right now, contrary to popular belief.
I also want to apologise. I think you can pick it up in the background, the bell chiming, because I am near a massive clock.
I was wondering what that was.
And it's just turned 7 o'clock as we're recording.
Yeah.
So, in an hour's time, you're going to hear that again. And you can be able to tell how much has been cut out of the podcast.
It's
by
true.
How long it's passed between those bells chiming and the
That's
next
true.
Clock.
You get a view into my editing world.
Yeah. How long has been lost? How long has been cut out of this podcast about Romania against Zimbabwe, the second game of the 1987 Rugby World Cup? So we had the first game, which we covered in last week's episode or the previous episode, which was New Zealand against Italy. That game ended up being a bit of a blowout.
Yeah.
This is the second game, took place the following morning, also in Eden Park in the same stadium.
Yeah. As it deserves.
And yeah, we talked last time about how not many people turned up to watch that game because kickoff was at 3 p.m. on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And they decided this time to really just double down, and even fewer people turned up to see this kickoff at, I think, 1 p.m. on
You would
on
see
Saturday
maybe
afternoon.
Couples of people dotted about the stadium in a way, but like, so the commentator predicted just under 2,000 people attended. On ESPN Scrum, it says 4,000 attended. When you looked at it on the cameras, it looked like about 37 people attended.
So at this point, Eden Park was about a 40,000-seater stadium.
Right.
And so they were quite well spread out. So I can believe about 10% is
full. That makes sense.
I think about 3,000 to 4,000 is probably
I particularly enjoy when you see people sat at the back of the stadium. Like, nobody's checking that your seat number allocated is the correct one. Just go sit at the front, man. Like, it's fine.
No, I mean, we saw the security last time. They let a dog on the
That's
pitch.
True.
Like, they're not checking anything at this
Very
World
good
Cup.
Point. So when it comes to us preparing for this podcast, you have a spreadsheet of all of the games written on them.
Yes.
Which is, you know, a big part of how we decide guests and timings and recording circumstances and so on. And when we first drew this up to play 1987, I immediately, my eyes were drawn to Romania pipping Zimbabwe. And for a long time now, I've been excited to see what the hell happens in this game. So to spoil it, it's Romania 21, Zimbabwe 20. So it's a tight game. And I've never seen Zimbabwe play a rugby match like on a big stage before. I've seen them play games like a kind of African Nations Cup and stuff like that. Yeah. I've seen them do that bits and bobs, admittedly probably only once or twice in recent years. But I've not seen a big, because, like, I mean, let's face it, this is one of the biggest games in the history of Zimbabwe and rugby that we're talking about here on this podcast. So I was excited to see that. I was excited to see what Zimbabwe and rugby looks like.
It's pretty mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
And now, it's funny you should say that, because I thought, right, it's worth doing some research into Zimbabwe and rugby, because you say not something I was massively knowledgeable about. So I firstly looked up, right, so this was only a few years after they became Zimbabwe, the country became Zimbabwe.
Yes.
They started off playing rugby as Southern Rhodesia, then just Rhodesia.
Right.
You know, they played under the Rhodesian Rugby Football Union. Mm-hmm. They, in 1980, were renamed the Zimbabwe Rugby Union. And the other thing that happened at that time, right, and you wouldn't necessarily know it by looking at the team as they ran out, was they integrated the teams, because prior to that, there was a separate team, represented like national team for black people and a separate team for white people.
Right, okay.
And so from 1980 was the first time they allowed mixed coloured teams.
Right, okay. Because I'd seen that. So the commentators mentioned at one point that Richard Simba, who was the outside centre for Zimbabwe, was the first ever black player to represent Zimbabwe in rugby union, which is, you know, an impressive feat. And it's pretty good.
But this was the thing, like, they nominated the white team as the national team, so only the white players got caps, even though they had a separate team for non-white people.
I see.
Because, hey, it was massively racist.
Yeah.
Rugby, it's just really different. So, yeah, Richard Zimba was the standout player. He was the only non-white player on this team. And he really, he kind of, having read that story directly before watching this game, he sticks out a bit.
Yeah,
you know, because I was expecting far more when they talked about having made a big deal out of integrating the teams.
I didn't have context of him or anything going into this, so it was a bit different for me. But there's a point early in the second half where I just write in my notes, like, this Simba lad's actually quite good, isn't he? And then, you know, he does a few good runs not long afterwards. I then found out he was actually inducted into the IRB Hall of Fame in about 2007-8-ish. It kind of reflects, and the commentators talk about him as like this world-class talent that, you know, doesn't quite have the team to back him up, but has the potential to go a long way, you know. And he, you know, he was quite a good player from what we can tell.
Yeah, absolutely. So he was kind of one of the real standouts if you look at that Zimbabwe team.
Yeah.
There's, you know, a few more. Mark Neal is the other kind of standout player.
Yeah, so he's massive. So he's 17 stone. And
has a turn of pace.
Yeah, and was, what, 6'3", I think they said he was?
Yeah, so the commentator introduces him by saying, apparently they have got a big and dynamic number 8.
Yes, I also wrote this down, because he says the word apparently, lets it slip that he's probably not seen him play before. Hey, no dramas, that's fine, he's done his research, that's what matters. But then as soon as the ball is kicked at the start of the game, he suddenly just makes out that he's seen Neil play 100 times before, and talks about, oh, that's typical of Neil, that's just the way he plays.
He does say right at the start as well, I don't think many of the Romanian players will mean anything to anyone in New Zealand.
Yes, I heard that as well. And then he sort of name dropped that they've got a couple of Granny Gate style players, haven't they? But I couldn't figure out who, because all of the names are very convincingly Romanian. So I don't know if somebody's maybe changed their name to sound more Romanian so they can play on the national team. I don't know what's gone on there, but he kind of implied that a few of these players are probably New Zealanders or have played rugby in New Zealand and have just gotten easy into the national team.
No, Romania had toured New Zealand a few years earlier.
Oh, is that what? Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
I couldn't get that out from what he was saying.
They drew with the junior All Blacks 10-0.
Yes.
Yes, so that was kind of, this was actually, I mean, we're jumping around, we'll come back to my Zimbabwe facts later. This is probably the all-time best Romanian team.
Right, yeah.
This is probably the best team they've ever had.
Yeah.
In theory, yeah. Yes. So it's an interesting time for Romania in general, because it was 2 years before the Romanian Revolution, which took place in 1989.
Yeah.
So Romania at the time was like it was essentially a police state, you know, there was essentially nothing you could
do. Yeah.
And like, basically any entertainment was state sanctioned. So like rugby, I think it probably led to rugby being strong because it was one of like 6 sanctioned activities you could do outside, you know.
Yeah. And at this point, Marius Tinkler was only 9 years old. So, you know, it made it a lot harder for them.
There's probably people that know far more about the Romanian Revolution than me having read up on it
yesterday.
That are screaming at that and saying that's completely wrong, and I apologise. But yeah, so it was a really interesting time for Romania. It was just before a time of massive political upheaval about 2 years later. Okay. But, right, in the 5 years prior to this World Cup, the 5 years immediately beforehand, Romania had beaten Wales, they'd beaten France, they'd beaten Scotland, and they'd beaten Italy three times.
Oh, wow, okay, this is a genuinely good team then. Like,
yep.
Obviously, in comparison with the rest of the world.
Exactly, and they went on to beat all four of those again between 1987 and 1991.
Oh, wow, okay. So,
this is the strongest team Romania ever had. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, if Twitter existed at this point, you'd imagine people would be calling for them to be in the Six Nations.
Mm. Imagine if Twitter did exist at this point.
Yeah.
No, but I think Romania at this time were kind of the equivalent of Argentina at the minute.
Yeah.
You know, of like, they're not expected to win anything, but if they did cause an upset, it wouldn't be as upset, you know, as grand.
The commentators did say at some point they were expecting Romania to potentially reach the quarterfinals.
Yeah, they said there's a lot of our European colleagues are saying they could cause an upset.
Yeah.
So yeah, so this was the second most points in this World Cup that Romania have ever scored in the World Cup, to 2003, where they scored 4 points more and they played an extra game.
Wow.
So, you know, as I said, this is a good Romanian team.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't really see that at first.
Which is also mental, but because there's 4 points for a try at this point as well.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So you were scoring fewer points for, you know, when you scored.
Yeah.
Whereas Zimbabwe, I guess this is also part of their kind of, well, no, this is one of two golden generations they had.
Right, yeah.
You know, of them getting to this World Cup and then they qualify for the following World Cup afterwards as well.
Yeah.
But beyond that, beyond the fact they've played in two Rugby World Cups, I want to know what you know about Zimbabwean rugby.
Not much at all. I mean, I learned a little bit through the game about the players that they have available to them, and that it seemed they didn't have a coach at this point.
Are they the Ospreys?
So it looked like.
Mm.
So to skip ahead, there was a post-match interview where there was the Romanian captain stood next to the Romanian manager, who was in a suit and tie and everything, and gave a little bit of a response to the interview.
Mm.
Zimbabwe had nobody, and on the pitch at half-time, instead of going into the tunnels, the teams just stayed out. Romania had somebody come on to give the teams advice. Zimbabwe had a masseur come out, and nobody come on to give them advice. So I can't figure out whether or not they had a coach.
They have a man called Brian Murphy listed as their coach.
Right, okay. Maybe he was absent. Maybe he was on leave.
Maybe they just made a name up.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't actually exist.
Possible.
Maybe he's just Andy Ferreira, their fullback in a hat.
Yes. We'll come on to him. He's fun.
He puts on a fedora, Ferreira in a fedora, and he becomes Brian Murphy.
Yeah.
He's leading his interesting double life. So, right, I have two rounds here.
Yeah.
I have first five facts about Romanian rugby, and I want you to tell them whether, no, sorry, Zimbabwe rugby.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me whether they're true or false.
Okay.
Right? And then I have a list of players, and I want you to tell me whether they're qualified for Zimbabwe or not.
Okay.
Okay.
Qualified for rather than played for?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So qualified for.
I see where this is going. Okay.
So we're going to start. True or false? Zimbabwe once fielded a player called Magic Johnson.
False.
False, yep. Magic Johnson, the NBA player, never played for Zimbabwe.
No.
In a qualifying match for the 2003 World Cup, Zimbabwe once fielded a full back line who all lived in the same house.
False.
False, probably. I had a look at two of their qualifying games out of four and checked that at least two of the players were married, so I assume they didn't live.
So we're assuming that's false, but it's not provable. Yep.
Very full house and very good sitcom to be written if it was.
Yes. That's a good point.
Zimbabwe have beaten the All Blacks. True or false?
True.
True.
They mentioned it on the commentary.
Zimbabwe, as Southern Rhodesia, beat the All Blacks.
Which is pretty
cool. They beat the All Blacks, and they've drawn with the All Blacks as well.
Yeah, on the same day, apparently.
No, it was the same week.
Oh, the same week. Okay.
Same week. Yeah, so they've got a better record against the All Blacks than Scotland.
That's incredible.
And, you know, better record against Ireland until about 2014.
Wow.
So
that's remarkable.
Yep.
I'm 3 from 3 so far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're doing pretty well. They're nicknamed the Bold Antelopes.
That's not true.
It's not true. Do you want to guess what the nickname is?
I saw it earlier and I can't remember what it was. It begins with Nest, isn't it?
The Sables.
Sables, yeah.
Sables. Three brothers, Daniel, Donald and Douglas. Donald, sorry. Donald. Daniel, Donald and Douglas Hondo all played both cricket and rugby for Zimbabwe.
I believe that's true.
That is false. Donald only played cricket, but the other two played both rugby.
Okay,
and cricket.
That's close enough. That's
They've
good.
Got a long history of this kind of thing. So we briefly mentioned Andy Ferreira.
Yes. So his profession was he's a professional tennis player.
He's a professional tennis player. And like, when you look it up, there's no proof of his tennis
right,
career.
Right, so I looked this up to see if I could find anything, and I absolutely couldn't. So it's an interesting thing that I kind of overlooked on our first episode of this podcast, but all of these players will have jobs. So, yes. you know, we will have done it in our 2011 series where you go, oh, this guy looks like he works in IT or something. Whereas in this World Cup, it might actually be the case that the guy works in IT. But this guy, Andy Ferreira, worked as his job was professional tennis player. Do you remember that episode in the IT crowd where Moss pretends he's a professional tennis player, right? I know the IT crowd's aged very poorly, you know, it's not a great reference. But it seems like something he's made up and told the commentary team is to see if they've fallen for it. And so I did write this down somewhere that they say he's not got a lot of prowess in tennis, but he did take the Zimbabwe national team to Germany the other year. What does that mean? Like, A, do you have teams in tennis? Do you have national teams? I thought it was an individual or doubles sport.
Is it like the Olympic team?
Maybe, but to Germany, what's going on in Germany? Is it like the Tennis World Cup? Is it like the Olympics? Is it just like, oh, we're going to go to Germany on a lad's holiday? What does it mean?
I hope it was. I hope that was exactly what went on.
It could have been like the World Cup of the worst sports people.
Right, so there wasn't an Olympics in Germany around this time.
Right.
It didn't happen. It wasn't that.
What happened to tennis in Germany? They didn't elaborate. They didn't say this competition in Germany. They just said he took them to Germany. Was he just there like, right, lads, this holiday's on me. Takes his bank card out and he's just like, Germany's on me, fellas.
He just kidnapped them, ran off, hoped for the best.
Yeah.
They just went. In his little hat. He put his hat on, became a professional tennis player. He's Mr. Ben. That's what I've decided. Yes. Andy Ferreira is Mr. Ben.
Yeah.
That's a reference for British people over 50.
He's currently competing with Adolmio Man for fullback of the tournament. So should we continue to look at the Zimbabwe team?
No. Firstly, let's look at the team they could have had since.
Oh, okay. Of course. Yes.
So, a speed round, right? Yeah. I want you to very quickly tell me whether these current or former, they're all fairly recent players, are qualified for Zimbabwe.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So they could have played for Zimbabwe if they wanted to.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? We're going to start with Dave Ewers.
Yes, he's Zimbabwean, I know it for a fact.
Zimbabwe is qualified, yes. Sebastian Negri.
Yes, I believe he is.
He was born in Zimbabwe, yeah. Hoskins Tutu.
No.
False, correct. David Pocock.
Correct, yeah.
Yep, also Zimbabwean. Tendai Tarariwa.
Yes.
Yep. Lionel Cronier.
No.
Yep, correct. Puman Sledgewick.
Doesn't exist.
Correct. Brian Majati.
Yes.
Nick Frisby, but not before the adoptive parent rule came in last year.
I didn't know he was adopted. I'm guessing he's not. This is false.
It's false. Nick Frisby grew up with his birth parents, as far as he knows.
Yeah. In Australia.
Julian Ray.
No.
No, but I wish he was, so he could have played international rugby.
Yeah.
Kyle Godwin.
No.
Kyle Godwin is Zimbabwean qualified. Yep.
And he's uncapped, right?
Yeah. So, Australian utility back, Kyle Godwin.
Why the hell not do it, man?
I think he's played seventh for Australia, though, so he might have to loophole it.
Okay, fair enough. But still, you should go for it.
He's Zimbabwean qualified. They could have had him. Joey Carberry.
No.
No, he's not. Where's Hooson?
No.
No, you're correct. Andy Marianos.
No.
Yes, he is.
No way!
Andy Marianos is Zimbabwean.
Wow.
Kai Horseman. Former Wales prop Kai Horseman.
I'm going to go no.
He is qualified
for
Zimbabwe.
Okay. I'm kind of guessing no on everybody here, but...
What a team they could have had.
Mike Williams is another one you could have put out.
He's
Zimbabwean,
of course.
Yeah, Leicester Tigers, former... Second row flanker. I don't know where he actually plays now. I can't remember. I think he's still in the Prem somewhere, but I've forgotten.
Craig Brown, their fly-off from 1987.
Yes, of course. That's a good segue, okay? Because, so he's 19 years old at this point. They pick him at fly-off. They put him straight in the deep end, and this is his debut.
No, it's not. It's his third cap. He played against Portugal in
Of course.
Games.
Yeah.
They played home.
So they had one debutant called Pete Colback on the right wing. who seems a bit bored at points through this game. But otherwise, you know, the team just kind of fills itself out. There's a lot of players who you look at here and you don't really remember them from the match we've just watched. Should we go on to Romania?
So, yeah, so I guess you've ran through most of the team. The other guy I want to pick up is Eric Barrett on the other wing.
Yes.
Who... I laughed when I heard the word Eric Barrett, because it sounded like someone had made of another Barrett brother.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, that sounds feasibly like that could have been Bowden's uncle, you know? Like,
exactly.
And it does sound funny that somebody would say that. Like, oh yeah, his uncle actually played for Zimbabwe, funnily enough.
So, yeah. Do you know Eric Barrett's story?
No.
Eric Barrett had retired from rugby 2 years prior to this World
Cup. Oh, wait, yes. Yes, I do know what you're about to say, but carry on.
Retired from rugby 2 years prior to this World Cup. He was on the Zimbabwe selection committee to select the squad for this World Cup, at which point he decided, no, I want to play in this World Cup, and told all the other selectors, I want to play, I'm going to start playing again. Played 3 matches for his local club and got select. He resigned from the selection committee, but he also got to select the person that replaced him.
Yeah.
And he then got picked for the national team by all his mates, having played 3 games in 2 years.
Incredible. Because, like, clearly, he was just picking the teams and just constantly just thinking, none of our wingers are any good. I want to pick myself. And just then resigned from there, so he looked honourable and just got straight in the team. Thought, you know, thinking I could do better than them.
And he looks old.
He does, doesn't he? I don't know how old he actually was at this point, but let's have a look. So he's 70 now. So he was in his late 30s at this point. He was 36 in this World Cup.
36. He got himself called up. Yeah. Wow. There's a bizarre statistic that they give. I mean, there's 2 bizarre things they say about the teams when they're reading them out at the start, the commentators. One is they give the most unusual statistic I've ever heard, that, interestingly, all of this Romanian team have at least 3 caps.
That is such a good stat.
Which is not an interesting statistic. And then they say a very conservative selection by Zimbabwe. They've only put in 1 man for his debut.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a World Cup match.
Yeah, exactly.
They've just played warm-ups against Portugal.
It's a surprise when somebody does make their debut in the World Cup. Let alone, and like, they constantly referred back to how experienced the Romanian team was. And
yeah.
Realistically,
they've all got at least 3 caps. All of them.
I mean,
single
their halfbacks had, I think, 30 to 40 caps each, which was a lot at this point, especially for a team like Romania. But, like, it didn't seem like their selling point was their maturity, Romania.
No,
so
very
much
not.
Let's talk about the Romanian team. So they've got...
Sure.
So their Parashiev is their halfback, so their number 9 is their captain, who is partnered by Dimitru Alexandru, who had about 40... I think he said it was his 43rd cap. And he was actually quite good, you know, like he had a decent boot on him. Their number 8 called Christian Raducanu, who was, again... quite a big bloke, normally a second row. I looked him up, but was playing number 8 here. And then an interesting selection at fullback, Marcel Toader, which is spelt Toader.
Yes. So have you also looked him up?
No, I've not.
Oh, he's a fascinating character.
Okay.
So Marcel Toader is a massive celebrity in Romania.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So he is considered like an all-time 15 player for Romania.
Okay.
Like, he was incredibly good, played an awful lot for them at the time and was very, very good.
Okay.
But he then...
Wouldn't get it from this game.
No. At the time in this World Cup, he was married to a very famous singer in Romania.
Okay.
They then got divorced after he tried to embezzle her out of 40 grand.
Oh my God.
Like, he's... Yep. And she was like, I don't like that, I'm getting divorced.
Yeah.
He went on to get married a grand total of 6 times.
Wow. Right?
And he died when he was 54.
Wow.
There was a rumour that went around that he beat one of his wives, but the wife has, you know, denies it.
Right, okay.
But she did say no, but he did emotionally abuse me.
Jesus Christ.
One of his wives holds it, who was a famous TV presenter in Romania.
Right, okay.
Holds him responsible for a miscarriage because of the amount of stress and pressure.
Oh my God.
He put her under for it to be a boy.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and was an incredibly successful businessman outside of that, or so they thought. But in his last sort of 10 years, every project he started went under.
My God.
And his son, Maximilian Toader, was left with so much debt when he died that transferred to him that he's basically spent his entire life trying to work it off.
Oh my God.
And his son's like minorly famous in Romania, apparently.
That's awful.
But basically, yeah, like does loads Jesus of stuff to try and work Christ. It off and had to sell basically everything his dad owned in order to cover most of it.
I'm quite glad I didn't Google him before.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I did Google Christian Raducanu and he's got an interesting Wikipedia page. I don't know if you went as far as him.
No.
But it's talking about how he defected from Romania at the age of 22 when he was off in Edinburgh. Yeah. I'll read this out for you. Raducanu defected from Romania at the age of 22 while in Edinburgh. On the same day he played his last international. He said that he made a spur-of-the-moment decision, asking a passing policeman for a political asylum after dodging team security to walk out of a post-match banquet.
So this is their number eight?
Yes.
This is their starting
the policeman thought that he was drunk.
He's also enormous.
Yeah.
Can you imagine being that standard beat cop who has an enormous Romanian man come up to you and say,
right?
Can I please just have like, political asylum?
I want out, you know?
I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a whole section in Christian Raducanu's Wikipedia page about defection. Mm. And let me tell you, it is the biggest section of his Wikipedia page. Have you got it open now?
No. Go on, tell me everything. Tell me everything about Christian Raducanu and his defection to Scotland. Could he have Sevens loophole it?
I don't know, mate. But it says his move came soon after that of his compatriot Nadia Comaneci, and less than a fortnight before the overthrow of Nicolae Ceaușescu.
This would have been a couple of years later at the
in his home country
revolution. I'm assuming,
right? Yeah.
Okay. As I was mentioning, it was a massive turn of like political upheaval right after this World Cup.
He soon obtained his release from the RRF, Romanian Rugby Federation, allowing him to play in competitions organised by the Scottish Rugby Union. RRF officials also announced that around that time they would not object to him playing again for his country, while Raducanu lined up an opportunity to play for the Scottish Boroughmuir club. Later accounts of Raducanu's defection suggested a more sensational sequence of events, for which the Glasgow Herald journalist Alistair Reid provided an analogy. If John le Carré had tried to write an Ealing comedy script, he would have struggled to come up with a combination of intrigue and slapstick as compelling.
There's a description. I want a massive deep dive on Christian Raducanu.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
Romania's future games, we need to get even further into
this. We'll come back to this. There is another paragraph, a long paragraph on Raducanu's defection, but I think we'll come back to this at a later point.
Okay. I want to hear everything. I want to know
so
much about
his Wikipedia page is pretty fascinating, so... Yeah.
God, and I was stuck on the... We each looked up one Romanian, and I ended up looking up the womanizing man who caused the miscarriage.
Right, yeah.
And you got the bloody spy movie.
He now works selling solid wood furniture. So, on our previous series of this podcast, well, the first series of the 2011 World Cup, the second game also involved Romania, and it also involved a number eight and solid wood furniture.
Assembling wooden furniture.
So, Daniel Carpo assembling a table... pre-match was part of the build-up on your Romanian coverage of the game. Yeah. So we have somehow, on episode 2 of both series of the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective, ended up with Romanian number 8 building solid wood furniture.
Someday we're going to get to 2019, the only World Cup Romania aren't in, and we're going to need to find a way to shoehorn and Romanian number
Mihai
8
McAvey
building
making
wood furniture.
Chairs.
Yeah. I can't wait. Okay, so the teams run out for the game itself.
Yes.
And the commentators... The commentator says, this is a huge moment for the Zimbabwe team. It's the first time they've been to New Zealand.
Yes!
Not they're playing in the second ever World Cup game they've ever played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like... I mean, yeah, a lot of people will be watching rugby for the first time or second time at this point. And Zimbabwe, you know, it's a huge step up for them to be on the world stage, to be playing a game in a tournament significant enough that, you know, like 30 years later, people talk about it on a stupid, dumb podcast when podcasts didn't exist for another 20 years.
But then so Zimbabwe then ran out. Interesting stat as well. Three out of the four captains we've had so far are scrum halves. How does that make you feel as a scrum half yourself?
I've got mixed feelings on this because I want to... Normally I'd say, empowered. But there is nothing I would hate more than being a scrum half in 1987, because your job is basically just to be a punching bag. Lineouts are a complete shit show, man. Like, yeah. Nobody can jump. Like, there's no point in deciding where you're going to throw the ball, because while the ball's in the air, it's been thrown in so slowly that you've got ages to look at it and go, oh yeah, they're throwing the ball to this guy. I'm just going to jump higher than him and steal it. Or I'm just going to shove him in the back so he supplies really crap ball for his scrum half, who I'm then going to go and nail. Like, there is no positivity that comes out of being a scrum half in 1987. The scrums, man, the scrums are a complete shit show. That, you know, they hook the ball, sure, then it comes squirting out the back and you get hassled by your opposition nine, and suddenly you're playing on the back foot straight away. Why would you want to do that? Who signs up to be a scrum half at this point? Honestly, like, the core thing to being a scrum half now is, you know, you've got to be quite physical. You probably did back then, because you've constantly got eight forwards jumping on your back. You know, you've got to technically have quite a good pass. You should be able to kick these days, you know, all of that stuff. But instead, it's just, you kind of put the ball in and then hope for the best and maybe do a dive pass. That's the entire job description.
But that's it. The dive pass was to get away from everyone. Right. You're about to be flattened anyway. You're going to be on the floor. You might as well do it of your own volition.
Yeah. And that's why I'm quite glad that Parashiev eventually scores a try. You know, I'm glad of it, because it's just like, my God, you've had a torrid day, haven't you?
So the teams have come out, right? They're about to set up for the game when, thankfully, neither of these teams forget the anthems as Italy did.
So Uncle Sicilelli Africa plays for Zimbabwe.
Yes! But they have different lyrics.
Right, got this.
So they changed the lyrics, which has massive vibes.
So some mad plagiarism's gone on here.
You know that meme of, can I copy your homework? Sure, but change it slightly so they don't know it's the same thing. It's like, that's happened. They've just stolen someone else's anthem. Like, the next country long's anthem gone. Great, we're going to do this, but we're going to replace the words slightly.
Do you remember, so there was a time about 5 years ago when Lana Del Rey released a single, and then Radiohead clocked that it had the same chord progression as Creep, sued her just to take the piss, and just thought it'd be funny if they sued her and claimed, not sued her, but claimed 100% of the profits from it. That feels like the situation that's gone on here.
Funny you mention that, because South Africa did sue Zimbabwe for it, and Zimbabwe replaced and changed the national anthem to Creep by Radiohead.
Okay, yeah. There is actually a Radiohead song called The National Anthem. You could have made that as a joke.
No, but they didn't do that. Zimbabwe didn't do that. Zimbabwe really made the national
trick
anthem Creep by Radiohead.
Yeah.
Because they're all creeps and they're all weirdos.
Yeah.
It's such a romantic and lovely song, that. And, you know, I really feel like I am a creep and a weirdo, and I feel like the song really speaks to me as Zimbabwean. That's like, I meant that as a silly bit and it sounded xenophobic. That's not what I meant.
Yeah. You're not suggesting that Brian Majority listens to Radiohead every night.
He probably does. I can ask him.
Yeah, you should.
So
just do that now. Slide into his DMs, ask Brian Majority, like, hey bro, do you like Radiohead? You know?
So something I want to do on this podcast is keep track of weird stats that applied, right? Because up until this point in time, 100% of Rugby World Cup matches has featured a kickoff going out on the floor.
Yes! So the very
first thing that
Craig Brown does in a Rugby World Cup is just boot the ball straight out. And you think, great, picking this 19-year-old really paid off for you fellas, hasn't it? Especially when he's second touch of the ball, he just sticks it straight up in the air and a Romanian catches it. Like, it doesn't move forward.
Romanians hit the scrum. And there's a Zimbabwean coach, apparently, has said to one of the commentators, so there is a coach.
Oh, okay.
Has said to one of the commentators beforehand, we intend to take them on up front. They're not as good in the forwards as everyone thinks they are. Romania then completely battered them and eat them.
Push them back 10 metres.
That's the first thing that happens in the whole match.
Oh, man. It's funny.
Yeah, Brown then misses touch from penalty.
Yeah.
And then, boots it straight up in the air. And after free kicks, the interesting thing about Craig Brown, the 19-year-old fly half, having now watched a full game of him, is he is a really beautiful striker of the ball. Like, he kicks the ball in a really appealing way.
He is actually quite a good kicker as the game goes on.
No, I'm not giving you that.
Okay.
So he kicks the ball in a really aesthetically pleasing manner, and he kicks the ball like most players in this kind of 87 era.
Sure.
Just kind of thump it. They put their leg out and and they just hope for the best. Like, he properly swings through and strikes the ball in a kind of like very Johnny Wilkins, very clean manner.
Sure.
But every single time, the ball goes nowhere near where he's aiming.
Yeah. The thing is, there are points where I actually thought throughout this game, like, Brown is actually playing all right now he's had a bit of time to settle into the game.
Yeah.
But he has a lot of moments of the yips towards the start in particular, and I guess towards the end as well, when he's actually got to do a bit of game management rather than just hoping for the best.
I think Brown gets better as the game goes on, as you say, and I think he starts varying his game more, because at first he is just thumping up in the air for almost no reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, a lot of people complain about how much kicking there is in the modern game, but at least they aim where they're kicking now.
Right? People just kick it for the sake of it. So I'm going to quickly come on to a player that Romania had on the right wing called Alexandru Marin.
Yes.
Who, to spoil it early on, was a bit of a consideration for Dick of the Day for me, because he gets the ball three times, I believe. One of them, he runs into touch.
Yeah.
Another one, he basically just avoids contact by putting the ball into the air as a complete nothing kick. Like, he just kicks the ball because he doesn't really want it.
There's a lot in this World Cup so far of wingers kicking the ball because they don't want to take contact.
Yeah. 100%, 100%. I think it was a case of that. And then the third time he gets the ball, he receives a forward pass from Twada, falls over and goes off injured, which is pretty bad.
He doesn't just fall over. He goes for a dive and grounds the ball in front of him. So
on
I
the
thought, have they? Yeah, I thought, have they just scored? Does he think they've just scored?
So he's about 10 meters
20
out.
Meters
from,
out. Yeah, they're 15, 20 meters out. They're in the 22, but they're not on the
trial. They're nowhere near the trial.
And he goes into touch. And I thought, from the way he dives, that he's gone for the line. And I thought,
it does look like that, doesn't it?
Because
I didn't think this. Yeah. From like an incredibly forward pass as well. And then they bring him off and replace him with maybe the world's worst rugby player, Liviu Hedorka.
The commentators really had it in for this guy.
So did I! Really, I was watching him.
So we've missed my favourite bit. I missed my favourite bit of Alexandru Marin.
Go on.
So the Zimbabwean anthem we mentioned, the Romanian anthem, I have never seen stand as close as Romania do for their anthem. So they properly pack themselves in like the world's most like lonely sardines, really desperately like hugging each other incredibly close.
Yeah.
Like it looks
cozy,
sweaty, uncomfortable. No, it looks actually very comfortable. It looks very nice, frankly. Like you'd almost want to be a part of it. These massive Romanian men packing themselves in and like other ones standing in the middle as well so they can get in as close as they can. All of them packed in except for Marie.
He stood on the outside. Completely by himself.
With his arms around two of them, trying to look like he's fitting in. He looks like he's trying to hold his parents together when they're about to get divorced.
Christ, that's
like he looks like he's like he looks
hey,
like
maybe
a child
looking at
on the outskirts.
That man loved divorce.
He's really, really into it. But I believe actually one of the men he has his arm around is Stefan Constantin, who we will absolutely get onto. One of two brothers. Romania had two brothers playing the second row.
Yeah.
Lorentu and Stefan Constantin,
who looked identical.
And, yep, but
there was a little bit of a difference between them. We'll get onto them. The other thing I loved about this Romanian pack is Julian Dimitris's dad was playing blindside for them.
Do you want my favourite thing about the Zimbabwe pack?
Go on.
Five of their pack are tobacco farmers.
No!
Oh, no, I think it's four of their pack and one of their wingers
and international athletes.
Sorry, yeah. But still, at least half their pack are tobacco farmers.
That's incredible. So that's a third of their starting team.
Yep.
A tobacco farmers. That is so good. That's unbelievably good. Wow.
When you're saying about them all having jobs. They've all got the same job.
Yeah. That's incredible. Should we go on to the first try of the game?
I mean, there's one thing that happens. Like Romania play sporadically some decent rugby in the first sort of 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And
careful,
you know, like it's yeah. It's okay. They play some competent rugby in the first.
They
five,
catch
ten
the
minutes.
Ball, you know.
Once or twice. They have one really nice movement where they manage to get it out, and they've got two man overlap, and it gets to Vasil David, the inside centre, who is the biggest ball hog I've ever seen.
Honestly, he would if he had somebody completely unmarked outside him, he would kick it to them rather than passing it.
He at one point, really early on, has two men outside him. Either of them would have scored, right, if he gives it straight away. He then double pumps and actually beats a man.
Yeah.
Fair enough, you know, drifts dummies through.
It was easy to beat a man at this point. go for it.
Exactly. He then has another chance to pass it, doesn't give it. The fullback comes in on him and does like one of those really shoddy tackles where they're holding onto him and he's still upright. Yeah. And he's then got an arm free to offload, you know, both arms free, ball in two hands. He could pass it at any point. Another man comes in, he wraps the ball into one arm. He could offload it really easily. And the whole time he is looking at the support. Who would score this entire time and he doesn't give it?
I've got it written down in my notes at one point that I think he's a robot.
Yes. I mean, the break he makes in the second half where they run a really nice move that gets him into a lot of space. And he has enough man outside him. Man would score if they give it. Yeah. And instead, for some reason, he kicks the ball into touch.
He kicks it into touch, yeah. And it's that's the most robotic decision I've ever seen. Because clearly, before he's got the ball, he's decided that what he wants to do is kick it. And then he accidentally makes a break and then he just commits to his decision. It's mental, like, how low the standard was in the World Cup.
Vasil David, the ball hog robot.
Yeah. Let's talk about a try.
So, yeah, the try happens. The try happens. And it's amazing what can happen if you actually kick for space rather than just aimlessly.
Right? So, yeah, so that's kind of what happens. So, it's not Ferreira, is it? Isn't it Brown who sticks the ball in the air and goes for a bit for chip kick and finds a bit of space?
Oh, I thought it was Kalbach, the winger.
Kalbach, okay, yeah. Finds a bit of space. And then he does a really nice little dummy and sort of fade back on the outside. And a really lovely offload to Simba, who goes the rest of the way, grounds the ball. And it's actually a pretty nice try, I think.
Yeah.
Kicking for space is really important. However, the thing that you will most like about this try, you've not brought up, and I'm not sure if you noticed it, but fullback and pro tennis legend Andy Ferreira can't pass off his left hand. So he reverse spins the ball.
No.
He does this twice in this game. When he passes off the wrong hand, like he spins it. I've just gestured to you on the camera on Zoom.
he
reverse spins the ball. He can't spin the ball off his left hand.
Is he so used to trying to get spin on the ball in tennis that that's just his
maybe,
technique?
But he finds his man on both occasions. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, in a game where scarcely people catch the ball, that's a bit of a feat.
Yes. There are lots of players who just outright can't spin the ball playing in this game,
sure.
though.
Yeah,
there's lots
yeah.
of players who can only do little pop passes and can kind of throw the ball along.
I noticed that, so I've mentioned Parashiv, the Romanian scrum half. He, 9 times out of 10, would try and spin onto his correct hand when passing the ball out. I guess it's just the way it was. It's amateur rugby, isn't it? But it's mental, you know, that's how far the game's come. There was a genuine, a reverse spinning fullback playing in the World Cup at one point.
And he was one of Zimbabwe's better players.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I thought he was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed
watching him. Yeah, I enjoyed watching him.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of him.
Agreed, 100%.
He loves to have a bit of a run. He will sometimes randomly thump the ball, but hey, that was what everyone did at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually checked that he played in the rest of the World Cup after the heartbreak last week with Gitsoni.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that he is going to show up again.
So I don't know how far we want to skip forward. Because you mentioned Gazzoni, and I think there's a player in every game this World Cup that I'm going to end up slightly obsessed by, right? And last time, it was the Bunga Bunga Dolmio man, Gazzoni. This time, it is, as we've previously mentioned, the Romanian lock, Stefan Constein.
Okay. Yeah, go on, skip ahead to that.
So.
I have in my notes. There. Oh my god!
Yep. So, there's a completely just nothing mall, right? The ball is the thing's collapsing, the thing's falling apart.
Ball's pretty unplayable. Everyone's just searching for it.
Up until the referee's about to give a scrum to the team previously in possession, the team going forward. He's in the process of blowing for that when Stefan Constantin, the Romanian number 5, the second row, who up until this point, this is about 20 minutes into the game, has been very quiet.
He's done nothing. Right?
He has done nothing up until this point.
I hadn't noticed him.
At which point, he notices that George Elcom, the Zimbabwean prop, the loose head, is stood right in front of him, and he just punches him in the face twice.
It's brilliant. Like,
there's nothing to provoke it. There's no reason he would be angry. He just looks up and sees a man in front of him. And like, I went back and looked at, there's a slow motion replay.
Yeah.
Elcom isn't even talking. He hasn't even said anything to him.
I watched
he just
this
looks
back quite
him in
a
the
few
face
times. So
did I. He just looks Oakham in the face, punt, like jab to the jaw.
So he goes.
Oakham goes right down.
It's two left hooks. So he goes for one, notices that Oakham's still on his feet, and he goes, well. And then he floors him with the second one. And the best thing that you've not mentioned, he was right in front of the referee.
The referee is looking at it.
The referee sees it.
He blows his whistle. He points to Constantine and tells him to go stand over there. Not on the touchline. He says, go and stand 2 metres to my side.
And just somehow doesn't send him off.
He then gives, so he sees two punches to the face, the prop go down on the floor and lie there for about 2 minutes out cold, and he goes, penalty only.
Yeah, I especially and then love the commentators saying that, well, you wonder what it would take for this guy to get sent off. Maybe if Elkham went off, it would be different.
Yes. He also totally should have, looking by today's kind of concussion standpoint.
Yeah, sure.
Like, if you've been knocked out cold, you should not be still on the pitch.
I also enjoyed that from that, Zimbabwe went for a kick at goal, came up short to Constantine, who caught the ball and went on a mad rampaging counter-attack and just tried to turn into Leone Nakarawa in 2 minutes.
He does, though.
Yeah.
Like, he successfully transforms himself somehow into bloody Mills Muliaina.
Yeah, right?
Who starts running
delivering
back.
Passes over the top,
like,
one-handed.
Yeah, so he throws like a dummy. The Romanian... No, so
there's a little swervy sidestep.
Swerve step someone. Yeah, then pops the ball over the top to his winger, who has a little charge down
He's got a good tackle being made on him as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. And he's got a hell of a turn of pace.
Yeah. And he's just suddenly decided, well, seeing as I'm still on the pitch, I might as well celebrate it, right?
Yeah, well, it's like, I think it's like he was asleep for the first 20 minutes. Then the moment he's punched someone, he's now like, okay, time to start the day. Because moments later, then the ball spills out of ruck. He hacks it on and is absolutely rapid, like haring after it. He's suddenly really, really quick, out of absolute, like Guido Petty style.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, he becomes really fast, chases it down, puts a load of pressure on, wins Romania the line out.
The thing is, though, in the 22. Like, whenever he does something decent, you're just looking at him, you shouldn't be on the pitch, though, should you, mate? You kind of just, you can't help but watch him do these things and just think, like, this is a bit unfair. Like, you should have been sent off very clearly for punching somebody in front of the ref.
It's just kind of slightly extraordinary, the whole thing. I became completely obsessed with watching him.
Yeah.
Because he just, from that moment on, from the moment he's punched someone twice, he is everywhere and he keeps making these key hits and key interventions and popping up and doing, you know, link play and link work and so on. It's incredible. There's also, I don't know if you spotted this, my favourite ruck ever happens just before this.
Go on.
So, Romania tried to spread it down the line. They do hands. The winger... is stood like 20 metres.
That was an advanced move back then.
The winger is stood about 20 metres in from the touchline and just runs into his opposite number, who gets him to ground. And at which point, one of the Romanian forwards tries to fly in the side. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, from out of shot, one of his own teammates flies in and smashes him in the head and knocks him clean off the ruck.
I didn't clock that.
So there's two players do completely, totally illegal clear outs. But they happen on each other, so they kind of cancel each other out. The ball then spills out of the ruck on the Romanian side. The 10, Alexandru, tries to fly hack it. It goes straight into the hands of one of the Zimbabweans and then chips it down.
Yes! The point where everybody just decided they wanted to suddenly stop volleying everything.
Yeah.
There's one passage of play where just everyone's just volleying and fly hacking the ball and no one wants to
because they've just
up.
Seen what happens when you take it into contact.
They've just suddenly agreed that instead they're playing footy now. Like,
it's incredible. I keep saying that, but I'm just slightly in awe of this game.
From that little chip over the top that he does. I did note this down, well, the end of that down when everyone just suddenly starts, you know, trying to kick the ball here, there and everywhere. Yeah.
This kind of whole passage then eventually results in a try for Zimbabwe as well. This kind of period of pressure, because they then get the ball just inside the 22. And so Mark Neal, who obviously has been talked up, apparently he's a really good number 8, then makes 3 carries in quick succession, like 3 carries out of like 5 in a row. And it's the only period of like what looks like modern rugby being played in this game.
Sure, yeah.
You know, of like runners hitting the line, like running onto the ball, hitting the line with some level of dynamism and pace and power.
You know, it's a good sequence of pick and goes that they have going there. Mm. You know, the scrum half, Jellico has a bit of a snipe, and then Neal spots a bit of a disconnect as Romania are kind of folding round. Well, not folding round, that's a bit strong. That's a bit too much praise. But as they're probably realigning and just picks and goes sort of the last 10 metres to score the try.
I mean, you're being a bit kind to Zimbabwe there. Both of the players who should be marking him, both the guard and the first man out, are looking at, in different directions. It's like on, like, you know, like old PS2 get stealth games.
Sure.
When the guard, if they're not looking in one direction, they can't
see.
You walk straight between them. That's what Zimbabwe's defense is like.
Well, there is another, the real reason why this try is scored.
Mm.
So there's the guard and the bodyguard are pretty oblivious to the fact Neil's picking the ball up. There is one person who spots Neil about to pick the ball up. And do you know who that is?
Who is it?
Liviu Hedorka spots that big Neil is about to pick the ball up, turns and runs in the other direction because he doesn't want to tackle it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow.
And so Neil goes the whole way and grabs the ball.
Hedorka is the winger you mentioned who's come off the,
he's come off the bench.
Off the pitch.
So at one point, so that's the first error he makes in the game. And then, you know, not long afterwards, he gets the ball. So Ferreira chips the ball across. Hedorka just kicks it out under no pressure, like fly hacks it out under no pressure. When he could have picked it up and had like quite a good run
or just randomly hoofed it as everyone did there.
And then his next touch of the his next real touch of the ball, he kicks out on the fall and then goes down for a little bit in that way that wingers do when they make a mistake. And to be fair, Neil did probably take him late, but I'd say probably, yeah. I mean definitely. And his next touch of the ball, he knocks it on. So I decide to start making a Hedorka error count, which by end of the game got to 10. I then wrote afterwards, fuck off, but we'll come on to that, on why I did that. But yeah, so he makes a knock on, there's a bit of a dumb offside penalty that remains
conceded. Oh, mate, no, it's not just a dumb offside penalty. It is the Mona Lisa of dumb offside penalties.
Right, okay, I probably sold it short there.
So Tade knocks the ball on under no pressure because it was 1987 and that was the vogue at the time.
Yeah,
you people know, that was a real catch. Fashion.
Yeah.
People just
what did they do in training?
I don't know. They probably just went back to the tobacco farms.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't, like, how are you playing for your country if you can't catch a high ball under no pressure? Yeah.
Also, speaking of, like, I look at Mark Neil and think, like, you're one of the players who I most think you're probably quite good, but you also know for a fact that he smokes. Like,
absolutely.
At this level, you know? Carry on.
Absolutely. So Tadir, knocks the ball on forward in front of him. And our boy Hedorka doesn't just pick the ball up from an offside position. He sprints top pace to get to the ball in order to catch it from an offside position. He's already in front. And he really runs out of his way to sprint and regather it. Right? So he really, really tries to give away a penalty when no one was nearby. And there was nothing going to come if he just let it go. Or he'd let Tadea get it first.
Even better, when he does pick the ball up, he just runs for the touchline and goes out. I actually didn't know that was Hedorka, so that makes it 11 on the error count.
That was my favourite moment of him in the match.
Yeah.
It's a real coup for him. He's really quite a great player. I have written underneath that, God, rugby was shit.
Yeah, right? There's a point where it's just like, I realised that the rugby is that bad in this game that the referee just stops awarding knock-ons.
Yes. It's like, well, you try.
It's like, it's like, it's that common that we'll only award the really spectacular forward passes and knock-ons. Otherwise, it's just play on, fellas, do what you want.
He does, though, call back what would nowadays be the most simple try imaginable.
Yes.
So, towards the end of the half, Romania have an attacking scrum, and they run what is nowadays quite a basic move.
Yeah.
But at the time, it would have been revolutionary.
Sort of slide between your two centres.
Yep, they had a dummy runner, right? They had a dummy runner coming in between what would be the sort of 10 and 12, like the first and second receiver. And the Zimbabwean 12, Graham, steps out of line in order to tackle him, to try and tackle him, right? Then realizes he doesn't have the ball. Ball goes behind and it goes into Ferreira, who, you know, sprints it in from having exploited the numbers with one man taken out. The referee calls it back for obstruction. There is no obstruction. Graham just chose the wrong man. He actively steps into the way to tackle the wrong guy. Yeah.
Who was about 5 meters away from the guy who was going to catch the ball. So he wasn't realistically getting anywhere near to make that tackle.
No. No, there's absolutely no obstruction whatsoever.
No.
This referee would genuinely have disallowed about 80% of tries in this year's Six Nations.
Yes, honestly. Yeah, no. That, and, you know, that was actually quite a good try. And it was like, come on, can we not just make the most of the small miracle that is Romania catching three passes in a row?
I know. Yeah, it's like the first...
That is all they needed to do to cross the try line was catch the ball three times in a row. And normally they genuinely could not do that.
The amount of unforced errors, and every time they've got half a chance, they seem to just drop it the moment they pass to, you know, the second to last guy.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them. Like, there's one turnover they make, I think it's start of the second half, where they just kick it into touch. Like,
yes.
They
kick it
straight out on the full.
I have written down at one point here, Romania do fun double switch move and then kick it because David is a robot.
Yes. Exactly. It's really exhausting.
So then I have written, you know, we get to halftime, the score's 11-3 to Zimbabwe, and they are very good for their lead. I then just have written down, Craig Brown looks like he belongs in ABBA.
He does. He does, absolutely.
He has the ABBA haircut.
He looks like he is ABBA.
He's somewhere between ABBA and Aerosmith in his haircut, which is a really weird mix.
He's ABBA.
I think he's more on the side of ABBA.
He's ABBA. He's absolutely ABBA. Craig Brown should have been in ABBA. Confirmed. He then puts the kickoff out on the full again.
And which Romania get into a position to get a penalty, close the gap to 11-6.
He puts a drop out from the kickoff out on the full.
Yeah.
Rather than, yeah.
Yeah.
I realise I misspoke there.
That's okay.
So that is just another addition to his fact that he is a beautiful striker of the ball, but he cannot aim.
Yeah.
I thought Craig Brown is kind of the anti Tynes Kotsur. Right, he's a student who's come out of nowhere.
Sure,
for you know, like winning his first couple of caps.
The Minnow African Nation.
And is really reliant on kicking the ball. Just he's shite at it.
Yeah. I get that because realistically, he probably didn't have a lot of flair. Although there is a moment that we will come on to where he showed a little bit of flair. But
yeah,
I know what you mean. Like. He didn't attack the line very much. He was mainly just sitting in the pocket and trying to boot Zimbabwe into the right places, which, to be honest, was probably the right approach for a game like this where they're playing against a bigger nation. You know, they've scored those two tries, one from a chip over and the other one from a pick and go. And they probably do just want a bit of a slice of luck. So I get why you played the game in the way you did.
Yeah.
But because, of course, at this point, you kind of have to just pick and choose one way of playing the game rather than playing what's in front of you like any normal 10 would.
Yeah, exactly.
Any good rugby player.
This is all followed up very shortly by what I have written down as a really funny knock-on.
Go on.
Where they slide it through and one of the Zimbabwean players... Do you know that thing when like you take the ball running backwards and you pop it up to the 15 who's running on?
Sure,
the
yeah.
They do that, but Ferreira just knocks it on.
Yes, I remember this. And then it's great because when they go back downfield, Twadda does exactly the same thing.
Yeah. He's picked up immediately, like it's starting to catch.
Yeah.
Or not catch, as the case may be.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that anyone is catching.
And I just have written down, Romania are so bad, twadda.com. There's a few more penalties exchanged. They get to 14-9. Yeah, sorry, you were about to say something.
No, just I couldn't work out what was going on with Romania because you see odd moments of them looking good, right?
They look so bad.
And I knew going into this, again, that they'd beaten France and Wales and Scotland in the previous few years.
Sure.
They'd beaten Italy repeatedly. And I couldn't see that team there.
No.
Other than the scrum. The scrum was...
The scrum was good for most of the game. There was a point towards the end where they started to get dominated on a couple of their own balls, but that might have been fatigue.
Yeah.
It might have just been a bit of hunger on Zimbabwe's part.
Yeah. They had, obviously, the massive advantage in the line-out that was... the Constantine brothers,
sure.
Who are giants.
Yeah.
And then Zimbabwe's locks were genuinely, I think, like 3 inches shorter than them.
Yeah.
So that became a massive advantage. I want to mention as well, their opposite number, right, was born Malcolm Sawyer, but changed their name to Tom Sawyer, presumably after the Mark Twain novel. and went by Tom Sawyer.
Interesting.
And I want to dig into this and know why Zimbabwe had a player who named themselves after a Mark Twain poem.
Well, funny you should mention this, because I did a little bit of... I mean, for some reason, when you asked me earlier what I know about Zimbabwe rugby, I failed to mention this. But I did a little bit of research on some of the future players and how long these players played for and stuff like that. And I found out that in the mid-90s, they had a loosehead prop called Roger Moore.
No.
Yeah.
Was it the Roger
Moore? It wasn't, I don't think. But that is, you know, post The Spy Who Loved Me. So, like, this is like Roger Moore, as in James Bond Roger Moore, will have already been famous by the time Roger Moore played for Zimbabwe. And hey, I know it's not quite the same as Harry Potter playing for Leicester Tigers, but he still will have received quite a lot of comments.
For anyone listening, you can currently hear the chimes going. You know, an hour has passed in real life. How long has passed in the podcast? So, can we, between Harry Potter and Tom Sawyer, get a fictional character's 15 together?
Hey, I mean, I know Roger Moore's not fictional, but we could give him a go. I mean,
he's basically James
Bond. Isn't there an Ethan Hunt who plays in the Premiership?
Is an Ethan Hunt. Yeah, Gloucester, like, under-18s has an Ethan Hunt. Because there's also Tom Cruise, obviously, playing for Wasps.
Yeah, of course.
So one day I want them to play against each other, and it can be the greatest
that would be good.
Moment
that
in
would
rugby
be good.
History. This is pretty strong. This is a good start. People start sending them these, and I'm sure.
I think there's a Brive player called Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes. No, I remember him. He's... Oh, God. Now, where's he from? Because he's from, like,
Green
Portuguese
Hill,
or something,
I think.
Isn't he? Oh, okay. I always get Portugal and Green Hill Zone confused.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty common mistake. But, yeah, no, he's pretty quick, to be fair.
Hmm.
Usually plays on the wing, can play fullback as well. Yeah, he's a pretty handy player in the top 14.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to remember about that guy. He has got to go... at a moderate speed. Nice. So, speaking of moderate speed, Richard Zumba.
Yes.
Is he the best rugby player we've seen in this tournament so far?
Genuinely, good shout. No joke.
Suck it, Grant Fox.
No joke, he played better than either of the New Zealand centres in the previous game.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah,
like,
comfortably.
He genuinely looks like he has a touch of class about him. And he's one of those players where you get the impression that if he played now, he could probably, you know, with the skill set transferred to 2021 rugby, you know, you get the impression that he could maybe play 13 or on the wing at a decent level still.
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah, he's got extremely good pace and good balance and is strong. Just sadly doesn't really get the ball much because his 12 can't catch.
Exactly. Campbell Graham, to name and shame him, who's probably like a 65-year-old man living on a tobacco farm somewhere now.
Sure. The good thing is we can probably chat shit about these players because they probably don't know what a podcast is.
They've lost their hearing anyway. They can't hear it if they do try. Richard Zumba, though, greatest player of all time.
Yeah.
As I say, like, really pacey, balanced 13.
Yeah.
He's just an absolute joy to watch.
Yeah, he's great.
And he keeps catching the ball in the first... 50-odd minutes, and just having little runs, beating the odd person or there, a couple of offloads.
Yeah.
Doesn't really get to show what he can do fully.
No,
until...
you know there's something in the locker, though, don't you?
Yeah. Until Craig Brown spots a bit of a dog leg, steps his man, does really well, and manages to time the pass perfectly to Zumba, who...
to finish.
Rounds his man... goes really, steps on the accelerator, as I believe they say. I don't know if they said it back then. In 1987, I might be the first person to use that term because it is currently 1987 and also 8 p.m. And Zumba.
3 p.m. now.
Thank you. You are a clock. And he just goes. And again, rounds another man, gets it under the post, dives, and commits a massive dick of the day contention. thing in the process.
So he does basically half a forward roll at this point.
Yeah.
Half a front flip, I'd maybe go as far as saying. So yeah, he dives onto his left shoulder and then does like a roly-poly out of it back onto his feet. And then suddenly realise he's injured his shoulder in doing so.
In the process of scoring the try.
Yeah. And he sort of spends the 5 minutes after scoring it checking to see if his shoulder's okay. He tries to play on for 5 minutes. And every time he goes into contact... or makes a tackle or whatever, you can see he looks uncomfortable because of the way he dived on it.
Romania shortly afterwards have a scrum on the 5 meter line, and he is very visibly holding his shoulder with both arms.
Right.
Like he cannot move it. And Romania don't run at him?
No. I don't get it.
Making, especially in 1987, he's not making a tackle.
No. Like, it's speculative whether a player who's fully fit is going to make a tackle.
Yeah.
Let alone somebody who has three limbs available, you know?
Exactly. But very, very good player. Very entertaining to watch.
It's a great try as well, you know. That's
fantastic.
I mean,
try.
Tried the tournament so far?
I mean, there was a dog that distracted the entire Italian team, and John Cohen ran through them all.
True. The detail about the dog does make that one slightly better.
What we need to know is, were there any cats on the pitch when the Romanian team were setting up for that?
Sure.
We don't know. We don't know. At one point, there are some ducks on the pitch, though.
Mm. That's good.
Later in the game, there are some ducks on the pitch. Thank you. Yeah, I was one of them.
Yeah.
That's how I was
in a previous life, yeah.
And so Alexandru, the Romanian 10, goes off injured shortly after this try. And in his place, they bring on Vasile Ion, who looks like a porn star playing a PE teacher and has just an absolute cannon of a boot.
He does.
You're lucky I finished that with his foot, because there are several feet, I'd imagine. And he is absolutely... Don't question it.
No, I'm going to question it, man. Don't say something so questionable if you don't want me to question it. What do you mean he has several feet?
There are several feet down there.
So inside his boot, he fits like maybe two feet in one boot, maybe?
Don't make me expand on the floor. There are people out there that got what I meant.
I've heard of an extra leg, but not an extra foot, bro.
A foot is a type of measurement.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's quite good. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a good one, man. Can I shake your hand?
Please.
Okay. You just did it over Zoom.
Yeah. You did a thumbs up and waved it at the camera.
What?
You waved a thumbs up at the camera.
No,
you
didn't. I
didn't. Shake my hand.
I shook your hand.
Yes, you did.
No, you did. Okay. You're lying.
You just did.
You just
did a thumbs up and just waved it in front of the camera up and down.
Wait, why have you just taken your trousers off?
I didn't have them on to begin with.
I actually can't disprove this.
So, as I was saying, they bring on Vasile Ion,
yes,
the porn star PE teacher.
Several feet.
He aims for the ducks and absolutely nails a perfect like 50-22 yes, touch brand into the corner by trying to kick it at some ducks on the corner of the pitch.
Yeah. Clearly, you know, you remember that time when Stuart Hogg was waving his arms around just to let Jakub van der Vaart see where the space was in the Irish backfield? Clearly the ducks were doing the same and doing very loud quacks, which, you know, must have been loud because nothing would have carried that sound.
Yeah.
So loud enough that Ion himself could actually hear the ducks quacking and go, cheers. And those ducks were actually Romanian.
Mm.
So, look, we could have a second man of the match.
Those ducks were the Granny Gate situation, right?
Oh.
That the commentators were talking about. They were Kiwi ducks who had defected by asking a police officer to head to Romania.
Right.
They stopped a police officer in the street and gone, quack, 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 quack. And the police officer went, sure, we'll grant you survival in asylum in Romania. And the ducks went, have you got any bread? And the police officer said, no,
bread's bad for you.
Yeah. And the ducks went, have you got any grapes? Have you got any nails? And the ducks kept on going and going and going. And it took a really long time. But eventually, they flew onto the pitch in a kind of Sonny Parker, Dan Luger, 16th man type scenario.
Yeah.
And aided Romania to the start of their comeback. Because that kick does eventually lead to the try that starts it all off.
Yes.
So, and Romania, in the last sort of 15 minutes, I think create about 30 try-scoring chances.
Yeah, there's a lot goes on here. Firstly, I'm glad that those ducks didn't try and defect to Zimbabwe, because otherwise they would be getting fed tobacco.
Yes. I also want to mention Vasile Ion was a fullback who could play centre on the wing.
Yeah.
He was not a 10.
No.
This was the only time he ever played 10 for Romania.
It's interesting. So when Alexandru, who had a good game, you know, he was like the one Romanian who I think played all right. Good is maybe a stretch, but I think he'd played all right. They originally move Hodorka to 10 for that scrum and put Ion on the wing. And this is after Hodorka, for the first time, about 60 to 70 minutes into the game, gets the ball and doesn't make a mistake, runs sideways and passes to a prop because he wants the ball out of his hands. And the commentators acknowledge that that's what he's doing at the time. So originally they put Hadorka at 10 and you think, oh my god, like how are they going to do this? Then thankfully Ion steps up and takes the 10 mantle. So he does pretty well.
Ion was primarily a fullback, but he did have one cap at scrum half against the Soviet Union in 1983.
Right, okay.
Where he scored a try and a penalty. Okay. So he could kick goals. This was something that was within his kind of capability.
Sure, yeah. And fair play to him stepping up, you know.
Yeah, Lloyd Williams style.
I've written down that there's a point where Zimbabwe get a penalty and go for a clearance kick. And Hadorka, like, it bounces right in front of Hadorka, who just chooses not to catch it. And it bounces into touch instead.
Oh, there's a moment where four Romanians do your ball.
Yeah.
And just let the ball bounce between them.
Yeah. It's crazy how, you know, everyone's commitment to not tackling. Right, okay. So, sorry, I've just reached a point in my notes which really confused me. I'm sure that you probably picked up on this as well. So there's a point. Romania are about to set for a scrum. This is just after Simba's gone off. Romania are about to set for a scrum. And the hooker for Romania, who is Grigore, realises he needs his hands taping up because he had tape on his fingers and it's come off. Did you notice this?
Sort of.
So the referee kind of goes, yeah, that's fine, time's off, we'll let you tape that up. And the scrum half kind of turns to him like, oh, you know, do you want a hand with this? You know, I can tape it up for you. And the hooker kind of turns around like, oh, I've not got any tape. At which point, one of the Constantine brothers in the second row hands him some tape that clearly he just had in his pocket or in his sock the whole way through the game. Just hands him some tape. And so Parashev starts wrapping up Grigore's hands and starts taping his fingers together.
Of course Stefan Constantine needed tape. How else is he going to kidnap the opposition scrum half?
That's very true. Very true.
But like, he needs to eat that evening. He needs to kidnap the scrum half somehow.
Was he just playing with tape in his pocket the whole time? I mean, Colin Sedura playing with a pen in his sock was pretty extreme.
Yes.
But having a whole roll of tape with you seems absurd.
That probably happened far more than you'd think back then. Because he didn't have a waterboy bringing on tape in that kind of situation.
Like, a medic did come on like after he'd already started applying the tape to sort of check he was all right. But that seems mental. Like, you know, did they just go, oh, what if I need to put deep heat on myself later on in the game? Well, I'll just bring the can with me, why don't I?
They didn't have deep heat back in 1987.
Fair point.
They didn't have deep heat then.
Which is weird because it feels like every single player playing in this game probably had loads and loads of deep heat applied to them before the game. That's all I think of when I think of old school rugby, is just everyone having deep heat.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Hadorka had like a VHS copy of Dirty Dancing in his sock.
That would be pretty good. Or, I mean, I found out that, of course, Christian Raducanu, who I did my research on, when he was born, the number one film was Bonnie and Clyde.
No. Oh,
so nice. Hopefully he had a copy of that on him.
I hope so. I think everyone should carry the number one film from when they're born with them.
Yeah, on a rugby field.
I once Googled it, is an unheard of a film called Congo about a giant monkey, which is adapted by a book from the guy who wrote Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton, which was clearly like after Jurassic Park was a big hit, they went, let's just make all these other books into films and see if they're as big.
Sure,
this one very much wasn't.
Yeah. And you know, you think, oh, King Kong, pretty big hit.
Pretty big monkey.
Right? Yeah. You know what? One of the biggest.
Yeah, I think so. I've seen very few monkeys bigger.
Yeah, personally, me too. And did he have a lot of feet, do you reckon?
Oh, so many. I've seen that tape, but we'll get onto that. I've seen some pretty extreme fan art.
Yeah. I mean,
we'll come on to that.
We've discussed Teletubbies before.
We've got Patreon episodes to do. We'll do
episodes on
King Kong's feet.
That's very true. A nice teaser as well.
So Romania get into the opposition half and they spend it just blowing chance after chance.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's 50 minutes left and they are 19 free down. So they're 20 free down.
I literally wrote, mate, how are they going to lose this game?
Yeah. Zimbabwe. Yeah.
Then they're so dominant. They're so far and away the better team.
Parashevsu, the scrum half, off the back of a scrum, the number eight pops it up to him and he dives over for a very simple, cheap try. But it feels like a consolation. Even though I knew they went on to win this game.
Right.
And I was thinking, okay, this is the start of the comeback. But it still feels like a consolation try.
Even
and
after this, they still needed two late. More.
Yeah. He scores with 12 minutes to go.
Right. Isn't it mad that your 8 passing to your 9 is the correct way round to do that? Because for some reason, both teams were constantly trying to make back row moves work. Where, you know, you get your 8 to break off and your 9 pops it to him. Obviously, that just means that your 9 is vulnerable to have the opposition 9 jump on him because the ball is out. Yeah, Exactly. And it's almost like your eight being the guy to first distribute the ball is the much better idea. And yeah, Parishiv scores the really, really simple, soft try with a bit of a dummy and go, which what he didn't even need to do. And he also got injured when he scored it.
Yes. Yeah. There's so many injuries picked up in the second half.
Yeah.
Suddenly, everyone just keeps going down.
Yeah. And I'm going to show you my notes on the what happens immediately after that.
That is just the word no.
Yeah. Because what follows that is the mega prick goes the distance and offloads to Twada. And the mega prick isn't even Twada at this point because it didn't have context.
It's amazing that you said mega prick because I have in my notes written, oh my God, Stefan Constantine, the Uber prick with the burst of pace and offload.
Yeah, because he is an Uber driver as well.
He was the inventor of Uber back then, as well as a prick.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, Zimbabwe kick off and there's a bit of a kind of fracas at first and some of the ball spills out straight away, like almost straight off the kickoff. Like,
I'm furiously shaking my head as you tell this story.
To Stefan Constantine, the very man who twice punched the opposition prop in the face and
he's
got
still
away
on the
with
field.
It.
Yeah.
And he's still on the field and has been in mad berserker mode. Right. At which point he turns into Christian Cullen.
Right.
So he has this like real sudden, like genuinely incredibly impressive burst of pace, right? And it's like not for a second row at the time.
No. He
not
burns
for a second
center.
Row. It's genuinely impressive burst of pace.
Yeah.
Right. Like he would be incredibly quick for a lock these days.
Yeah.
He would be incredibly quick for any forward these days. Like, we're talking like the very top end of forwards sprinting. And yet, he is this massive bastard second row specialist who likes to punch people in malls.
Yeah.
And it comes out of completely nowhere. So he sprints. He then sort of begins to fade inside the fullback, draws him, and then there's this perfect, like, hung offload, yeah, for, you know, Todea, who sprints it in and scores in the corner.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're thinking, oh, Romania are back in this.
They're in this.
They kick this conversion, then, you know, a try can
and
win it.
That's right, literally, like, the phase after that first try, isn't it?
Yeah. There's one phase between it.
Yeah. Try, yeah. That's crazy.
This puts the score to 17-20 to Zimbabwe, and means if they kick the conversion, then a kick can win it. You know, just a penalty will do it.
Oh, I was so cheering for Zimbabwe at this point. I just have written down, fuck sake. Of course, then the ball falls off the kicking tee.
Yes.
So there
are two really interesting conversion attempts in the same corner. One that we didn't mention in the first half, and I can't believe we missed this because it was one of my favourite moments. From the first try, the conversion of the first try is Zimbabwe score. When it's Ferreira steps up to take the conversion himself, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he steps up to take the kick. And he launches it, he hits the far post, and the ball spirals off. And the referee says, no, the opposition were charging it too early, trying to charge it down.
Yeah, of course.
Have the kick again. They then show a replay from a wide shot of it, and then not. Two players attempt to start charging in, and they start just as he's about to strike the ball.
Yeah.
They don't cross the 5-meter line.
Yeah, it's mental.
And yeah,
it made no
they call
impact.
It back.
Yeah.
No impact whatsoever. So he has another go, and he hits the other post.
Yeah.
So he hits both. He has two shots, and he hits either post.
Yeah. It's
and
wild.
I desperately want to have a third so we could hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
Go free from free. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, then, you know, Ion steps up to take the conversion here in this last 10 minutes. Crucial conversion. Ball falls off the tee, and he stands and looks at it. And he turns to the referee and he continues looking at it. At which point, Zimbabwe run up, sprint up, get into the pressure. He picks the ball up. And instead of trying to drop goal, he grubbers it into touch.
Yeah.
Which I think makes it the worst attempt at goal in the history of the Rugby World
Cup.
Right,
yeah. But he spends about 10 seconds turning to the referee and saying, can I kick it?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want me to do? And the referee's just like, I don't know, you do what you want. At which point, the Zimbabweans are all in their face.
I think not being a recognised kicker, he doesn't get the bucket of sand out and he doesn't go to sandcastle.
So
and like, there's a few points when
Craig
Brown,
it?
Who looks like a child, is taking kicks, where you think like, oh, that's nice. His dad's brought him a bucket of sand so he can play for a bit.
Yeah.
Whereas, Ion just places it on the floor and the ball digs his heel
obviously
in, places it on the floor.
Over.
Obviously it falls over. And he just stands and looks at it. He doesn't try to do the Steve Jones thing of attempting to drop goal.
Yeah.
He doesn't try and put it back up. Nothing. He just looks
just
at it, eventually
it
picks
touch.
It up, grubbers it into touch and does the worst shot at goal, the least action shot at goal in the history history of the Rugby World Cup, and it's such an honour to have seen that.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it? If that stat gets beaten, I will be impressed.
Yeah.
It would basically have to be a kick going over your own posts instead of the opposition's.
He grubbers it into touch. The ball goes about two metres forward.
It's not even a drop kick.
No. No. But we'll give it to him.
Sure.
So the ball goes forward 2 metres and over the touchline closest to him.
Yeah.
I think that is almost unbeatable, as you say, without someone like backheeling it over the own post.
Yeah. So straight off the back of this, Romania get another attack, don't they? Zimbabwe just suddenly are panicking. They have no idea what to do. When they're getting the ball, they're kicking it and they're not kicking it effectively. Hodorka gets the ball on the wing and does quite a smart chip kick. And Zimbabwe don't call the mark, and I'm not sure if they don't know the law. I have checked. The mark law definitely did exist in this World Cup.
There was an interesting point in the previous game where one of the commentators in both games is really prissy and likes to complain a lot about how rugby should be played, which apparently has just always been a thing. And he's talking about how they should ban the mark law, and they'd only just changed it a few years earlier, so it's only in the 22 you can call it.
Right.
Because it used to be you could always call it if it's a clean catch.
Imagine how bad that would be.
Yep. You know, Aussie rules style. He was saying we should have got rid of it altogether. We shouldn't have the mark rule.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so they don't call the mark. But the Romania do kick it dead, and Zimbabwe try to take it really quickly. They don't kick it dead. They knock it on over the line.
They knock it on over the try line.
That is a 22 dropout back then.
When they knock it on over the try line, Romania do this planned move where the scrum half has it and everybody else is just running in random directions all around him. And then the next part of the plan is the scrum half doesn't tap the ball and instead passes it to Julian Demetrius's dad, asks Zimbabwe not to tackle them and knock it on over the try line with an incredibly clear run in and just nobody marking him until eventually Brown gets an arm on him and he knocks the ball on. It is one of the most baffling moves. And then, as you say, the Zimbabwean winger gets the ball, runs up to the 22, also, takes a quick one and runs into touch.
Knowing that, again, Romania win it, and this happens with about 5 minutes to play.
Yeah.
I thought, is that the winning try? And I laughed.
Because it would be
such a shit try.
It was a terrible move to somehow nearly work. And Zimbabwe almost...
move, even worse defence.
Zimbabwe almost deserved to lose the game off the back of that one set alone.
Yes.
You know?
Because they basically just leave a huge gap undefended on the line.
Yeah, exactly. And Romania just say, just don't tackle us on this one, lads.
Yeah. Please.
Yeah.
Please.
So there's another point, so off a scrum nearish to this, where Romania get a bit of a push on, and Hodorka just joins the scrum to turn it into a 9-man shove, which isn't allowed!
I missed that.
Yeah, 5 metres out, and they don't score from it. And the scrum half... So Parashiv considers also joining and making it a 10-man shove to make it 10-on-8. Mm. But you just can't do that. You can't bring your wingers in to also push in a scrum. It's not a maul. But he just doesn't know that. I've not actually put that on his error count, but I feel like I should make it 12. He didn't get penalised for it. They just let it play on.
I don't think he knew the rules.
No.
I genuinely don't think he knew most of the rules in the game.
No. He was making it up as he goes along. It was baffling. I looked him up and I can't find much else about him other than apparently he normally played fullback, which is even worrying.
Worse.
Because I look at Hodorka and we've all done this thing before and we even did it on the last episode of this podcast where you go I saw X tier 2 or tier 3 international team play before and it's good because it makes you realise that I could play international rugby. But Hodorka, the game he had here for the first 75 minutes was how that game would realistically go if you did play international rugby. Because he was dropping the ball, he was running into touch, he was kicking the ball out on the full, he was avoiding tackling the opposition number 8. Everything was going wrong for him. And the commentators, every single time he was involved, was saying, oh, it's not been a good day for him so far, has it?
He was also quite an experienced international player at this point.
Yeah. He must have had a lot of good games to lead up to this.
Yeah, he'd played quite a lot. He played in a really, he scored a try against France in a really narrow loss to them.
Yeah.
He was a good established player for them.
Yeah.
And somehow he didn't know what rugby was.
Yeah, it was bizarre. So Zimbabwe have a bit of a counter, and you hope, oh, please, I really hope they can get into the 22 and force something. There's a nice little bit of a sort of a bit where one of the wingers chips it along the floor a little bit. I think it's Colback, chips it along the floor a little bit. And then Lungu, under no pressure, again, just hacks the ball into touch. And you think, dude, you could win your team this game. What are you doing?
There's so many baffling moments from both teams in these last few minutes. But the last 10 minutes, so much happens. They're so exciting and eventful.
There is a lot of drama, even though it's all really crap rugby.
As I said, I've been doing a playlist of all the games in this World Cup that I'm putting together. We do have this game on it.
Yeah.
I would recommend maybe watching it from Tsumba's try onwards.
Yes.
Because the game is a bit up and down throughout. I really enjoyed it, but it is a bit crap.
Yeah,
but the last 15 minutes,
I say no one can catch.
Really quite exciting. As both Zimbabwe and Romania are playing the clock and trying to make sure Romania win before the time.
But the best thing is, they're both really trying to like play smart rugby, play the clock, everything, play territory, and neither of them just don't know how.
No, neither team knows what to do.
No,
what to do in that situation.
They're both really panicking.
Both teams are panicking hard.
Clearly, this is long before the days of game management. You know?
Yeah.
Like, neither team knows how to close this game out.
Well, like, no one knows how to set for a ruck. You can see that every time anyone goes into contact.
Let alone a drop goal. So, boy, we'll come on to that.
Oh, I know. So, so Romania have about 3 minutes to go when they start a pretty spectacular move from around the halfway line. And I'd like you to describe this, especially how it finishes.
I can certainly describe the finish for you. I mean, a lot of the build-up was mainly hands down the line. And, oh no. Hidorka goes the length and scores the winner, doesn't he?
And it's a great finish as well.
It is.
This is the worst thing.
He gets,
really
he has two men to beat, and it's the first time he commits himself to going into contact all game.
Yeah.
And he steps the fullback and scores the winner. And it's mental, because obviously I knew that Romania were going to go and win this game. I didn't know that that bastard was going to score the winning try. Like, so at this point, you received about four or five texts just saying, no! Like, I nearly texted you earlier in the game just saying, oh my God, why have they put Hidorka at 10? When we had previously had no dialogue about who the hell Hidorka is. Because obviously I learned about who he is watching this game and gained a narrative on him that he is like the worst rugby player ever. And then he scored the winning try.
And it's a spectacular try.
And it's brilliant. It's where, absolutely brilliant.
And that will be the only thing. When people look back on his career, right, they will only see that try and his try against France and a narrow loss.
Yeah. You know,
that's what they're
his highlights package. Yeah. Singular.
Hey, there's two.
Yeah. So I then have underneath that written, get fucked.
But frankly, like, Romania created so many chances in those last 10 minutes that they deserve to take the three of them they do.
Yeah. It's a real horrific bit of shit in the bed by Zimbabwe. Yeah. But they do get another chance, Zimbabwe. They get into the 22.
I want to stress, right, with 12 minutes to go, Zimbabwe are 20 points to free up.
20 points?
With 12 minutes to go.
I thought it was 20 points to 9 by that point.
But, you're right, sorry, 20 points to 9. Sorry, 20 points to 9.
But
sorry,
still,
yes.
That is a big lead when tries are only 4 points.
Yep. And the kicker doesn't remember that you've actually got to strike the ball.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it a pretty difficult formula to score points behind.
Romania miss all three of the conversions of those.
Yeah.
Those three tries.
Exactly, yeah. So Zimbabwe do get one last opportunity and they do get into the 22 and you feel like they could do something here. And the commentators mentioned, like, could they maybe go for a drop kick? Could they drop Brown into the pocket? He's kicked some decent balls today. You don't know. And then Eric Barrett just pops up in midfield, gets slightly smother tackled and just thinks, this is where I offload to the three Romanians next to me.
There is one man in space in front of him, and he thinks, if I can get it to him, he is scoring, right? If he can successfully thread the ball
legally
between three Romanians forward to a player who dives over in the corner and beats one of those three Romanians, at least, Zimbabwe will win the game. And all he thinks is Zimbabwe will win the game rather than all the other circumstances.
Sure.
And he offloads it forwards to a Romania.
It's not a good end to the game. Romania obviously then go downfield a little bit, kick the ball into touch, and they win the game 21 points to 20, which is mental. I've also just clocked right now that Zimbabwe had a player on the bench called Jumbo Davidson who didn't come on.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes. Jumbo Davison and Keith Bell were on the bench.
What a time to realise that. What a time to realise that. But yeah, I was genuinely fuming after this game when that Zimbabwe had somehow gone and lost it, because that was such a bad performance by Romania, and then such a bad end by Zimbabwe to let in 60 minutes worth of tries in about 8 minutes.
So, as the full-time whistle goes, Lorraine Constantine, the younger brother, the one who isn't a psychopath so much, but is just very tall, does a super camp throwing his arms in the air celebration and turns to his brother to hug him. And Stefan Constantine just walks calmly off the pitch, like bloody
About
Darth
time.
Vader, towards the touchline, towards the tunnel, ready to go and eat his scrum half that he's just kidnapped.
So, obviously the Zimbabweans are gutted. And then, once again, the captains and the Romanian coach get to do an interview together, which is always quite a nice segment for the 4 minutes that come after full time. So, the interviewer asks Romania's captain, so that's Parashiv again, they ask him, sort of, well done on the victory, but probably not the performance you were after. And he just kind of goes, we want to be stronger. And then
he says he's very happy, though.
He does say he's happy to get the victory, yeah. And then their coach butts in and cuts him off halfway through a sentence and goes, "We need to regain the strength." Which could be something a Bond villain says.
How do they regain the strength?
Who knows? Because they immediately then go over to Zimbabwe captain Malcolm Jellicoe, who then... So did you pick up on what he said? Why he said they lost the game?
Well, so they say, "Can you answer our question very quickly?" And he then talks about 4 straight minutes.
Yeah. But, so they ask him sort of, "You played extremely well. How do you think you lost that? What do you take away from this game?" And he sort of says, "Look, I'm really happy with how we played. I think the boys were brilliant. Apart from the guy who came on in the centre, we, at that point... our central winger didn't know what they were doing. Once we lost Simba, and he said it very calmly. He didn't say it in an angry way. It was just that, it's one of those things that happens. But those guys didn't really know what they're doing. There's a bit of a disconnect there. It's a shame, but that's how we lost the game." And he answered it incredibly literally and incredibly honestly how he feels they lost the game. So he feels that the Romanian tries or breaks were scored because the guy who came on the centre for Simba, they hadn't prepared for that, and he didn't know what he was doing.
So I listened to that, and I didn't pick up on it. I listened to his interview.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that at all.
Yeah.
Andre Butendag was the player who came on for him that's been chucked under the bus.
Yeah.
And is currently lying there somewhere, roadkill, somewhere in Auckland.
Yeah. His captain just dobbed him in and basically said, like, he didn't say it in a harsh, malicious way.
Sure.
It was just kind of the way of, like, it's not his fault, but he didn't know what he was doing. And he said, there was a disconnect between our centre and a winger. And he name-dropped those two players rather than just saying, defensively, we were a little bit shell-shocked towards the end. Because like you can sugarcoat those things in an interview.
I suppose there was no media training back then.
Exactly.
So what you had to do was answer the question honestly and tell them that your teammates are shit.
Exactly. And say, like, those tries were these guys' fault. That's a shame.
Can you imagine Sergio Parise playing in this era?
Yeah, exactly.
He would have said Grizzlies should go and get shot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And he also would have been so completely dominant. It would have been great. I say dominant because he can catch a ball.
Exactly. He can catch a ball and he can kick a ball as well.
So that's the perfect recipe for a 1980s rugby player. Should we do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day?
I think we should. I think we should. And you might have just changed my Dick of the Day.
Okay. Who did you have written down?
Well, hold on. No, because Parashevsky, being the captain... Jellicoe, the Zimbabwean scrum half, being the captain and saying these two players are shite and the sole reason we lost the game...
It wasn't quite like that, but...
That was his exact words.
Okay, sorry it was.
Is such a dick move that you can't help but nominate him as the dick of the day.
Sure.
I was kind of torn between... So my dick of the day and man of the match, I was torn between the same two players for both.
Okay.
Who are Stefan Constantine.
Okay.
Who I thought was exceptional, but also punched a guy in the face twice for no
reason.
He's also
a bell end.
And Richard Tazumba, who I thought was exceptional, but also injured himself celebrating scoring a try.
So am I right in thinking one of these is your man of the match and the other one's dick of the day?
Yes, and I haven't quite worked out which way, but I think I'm going to go... Richard Stumber as Dick of the Day, okay, and Stefan Konstantin as Man of the Match, I mean, because of who won in the end.
Yeah, being your team's best player and injuring yourself by doing an extravagant dive for a run-in is pretty bad. So, yes. I get that. So, you're saying Konstantin's Man of the Match?
Yes, I thought he was Romania's best player for me.
Okay.
And was also a massive prick.
Yeah.
And sometimes that helps in the second row.
Sure.
And also being inexplicably the quickest man in Romania,
sure,
probably helps even further.
Yeah,
I genuinely think he was quicker than their wingers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of their wings was Hadorka and the other one was Marine. And those, whoever else.
Yeah, Marine didn't have a leg, though.
Yeah.
He was a small child without a leg.
Yeah.
Let him go.
So, speaking of those two, they're both in my nominations for Dick of the Day. So, mm-hmm. Marine for his trying to avoid contact every time he got the ball in the first 10 minutes and then getting injured is pretty bad. But then obviously getting replaced by Hadorka obviously will overshadow you, considering he did 11 shit things, excluding the joining in the scrum as well. So you could put that as 12. Simba is going to be lucky to avoid this for me because, yeah, as I say, that's pretty bad. But I've got to give it to Hadorka. He's absolutely my dick of the day. And I think I've known this since about the 20th minute in the game. But I've had it in for him, man. Like, yeah, he screwed up.
Live you, Hadorka, dick of the day.
Man of the match is difficult because I don't think any of the Romanian players deserve to be man of the match for me. So for me, it was between Richard Simba and Mark Neal.
Yeah.
So Neal, I think, had a good game. And like,
Mark Neal was very good.
I know that the standard was very low, but he did just look like a proper number eight, knew how to carry the ball, used his size to his advantage pretty well. So I'm tempted to say him, but given you've not gone Simba as your man of the match, I'm gonna take him as my man of the match. I think he was excellent.
I cannot really disagree with that. We've got things bubbling along nicely. That was the second game of the Rugby World Cup of 1987.
In real time, we've been talking for an hour and 40 minutes about this.
Thank you. We'll see if by the time we move on and we're done, we hear the dimes, bells, chime again.
Which is, but to say we're talking about Romania against Zimbabwe, this is one of our longest episodes.
Yeah. So it should
87.
Be. 87. We were, pretty hyped for this game.
Yeah.
So we will be back in a few days' time with another episode, which will be on the third game.
Yes.
Which was Australia against England.
That's quite a big... That's a step up from what we've had so far.
Massive step
up. Got to kind of prepare
Massive
ourselves.
Step up.
And am I right in thinking we have one of those guests on this
We
episode?
Do. All being well, we should be joined by Connor from Wibble Rugby. If anyone wants to visit the YouTube, you can find Wibble Rugby. They're very, very good. Genuinely professional analysis in the way I just make it up as I go.
The
along.
Reason why we got him on 1987 is so he can't school us both for genuinely being a good analyst, because he is.
When I suggested it to him, he did think it sounded very, very funny to try and do analysis on 1987.
Yeah. And boy, is it. So, that's exciting. Obviously, Connor's brilliant. So, excited to have him on here.
And we've got, you know, a lineup of a few more good guests coming after that.
Yeah, we do.
So that should be quite exciting. We've got plenty more coming over the course of the next few episodes. I apologise again if I have been echoey over the course of this. And I also want to apologise, actually. Someone on Reddit made the point that we had, they listened to an old episode in which we talked about Zach Guildford of the 2011 podcast.
Right.
And pointed out there were jokes we'd made about his alcoholism that stepped over a line. And I went back and listened. I think like they're entirely correct.
Okay.
And I want to make a proper like apology for that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's too easy to lean on a cheap joke when you're recording something like this in the spur of the moment.
Yeah.
That wasn't right. I apologise.
Likewise, as well, I'm aware I probably have made jokes about that before, which are out of line.
And it was dumb. It was stupid. Yeah. And it's something I'm just going to have to, you know, recognise was the case. I'm intending to go and put an apology, a sort of note of it in the episode description for that episode. And yes, and I want to, you know, extend that and take responsibility for that, because that was on me. It was me leaning on a stupid joke rather than thinking, and I want to make sure, you know, both of us will utmost to bear that in mind and not do that again.
Of course.
And thank you to, I'm sorry I don't have the name to hand for pointing that out to me.
Yeah.
And you know, making me more aware of that. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening doing yourself.
Thanks for listening to two lads talk about a rugby game from 30 years ago.
Yeah. Thank you to you for being a lad who would talk about a rugby game 30 years ago.
Likewise.
And I'd also like to thank Stefan Constantin for the entertainment.
Yes.
And also for sparing me from his dungeon tonight. I really very much hope he is well. We've got more of Romania coming up in this World Cup as well, which I'm quite excited about. So there's loads more coming up. There's going to be loads more stuff. Rugby, rugby, rugby. Please join us in a few days' time for Australia against England with Connor. We'll see you then. Thank you very much, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.